This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to The People Speak on BBS Radio. I am your host, Sophia Ray. Please tune in to The People Speak every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. If, for any reason, you need to leave during tonight's show, you may call in and listen by telephone at 716-748-0144. Otherwise, log in by computer or tablet at bbsradio.com. Be sure to click on Station 2 icon. Here on The People Speak, we encourage our listeners to participate by phone in any questions or comments to our guests. Please take advantage of tonight's show and call in and ask our guest any question at 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, our guest worked more than 20 years in human services, working with and advocating for mentally handicapped adults, persons with mental illness, and court-appointed adolescents. In addition, he has taught special courses at Salem State College for academically advanced youth. Dr. Peter Olalor is here tonight to discuss his book, Shrouded in Mist, Physics and the Archaic Symbology of Metaphysics. In addition, we will discuss death without dying and what it means in the language of symbolism. It is an honor and an early Halloween treat to have myself introduce you to Dr. Peter Olalor. Thank you, Doctor, for being here with us tonight. How are you?
Thank you. Happy Samhain. Happy Halloween.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Halloween is right around the corner, and we do have a pretty good topic for this time of the season, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. The veil of existence, absolutely.
Oh, yes, and that's right, because the veil is so thin at that time. And wow, and then we have All Saints Day right afterwards. Isn't that awesome?
Awesome and coincidental.
Exactly. So, you know, I read your book, Shrouded in Mist, and wow, what a personal experience and the depth you got into. It was a great book, very inspiring. I really enjoyed the poetry. The poetry really hit my soul. It was like, you know, I felt more alive and, like, uplifted, but it was so abstract as well. And it's almost like that the book is mainly indicating and pointing towards a death without dying.
All the time, since I was 3 years old.
Oh,
and I
wow.
want to assure the listeners that as a scholar, if I don't reference literature or scripture, it's personal experience.
Absolutely, yeah. And personal experience is one of the hardest things to write about, is it not?
No, it's getting rather old now. There was a time I had an English professor say to me once, "Mr. Olalor, has anyone ever told you you write like Thomas Jefferson?" So I gleamed with pride and stood real tall, and she slapped the desk and said, "It's not a compliment."
Yeah, but those. Well, you know, you kind of took that position too at Salem State University. Did you ever slap your hands on your desk and tell your kids off? And
no, quite the contrary. Many parents thanked me for a lot of personal growth in a short amount of time that their children went through attending my classes.
All right. Always as usual, Doctor, you always get me off track. Let's get back to the book here. Shrouded in Mist, why did you write it?
Because I was in the hospital dying of bacterial pneumonia, and I had access to a really neat computer that just swung over the bed, and, you know, one thing led to the other, and I'm writing about systems of knowledge.
Wait, you're sick, and you're able to write all of this at the same time? I mean, what incredible strength do you have?
Well, some of the poems there, although they are in order according to their section, I started writing when I was 17, which was like 1974.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of the poetry with me. And On the Road to Rishikesh was in the 80s. And the beginning was what I was coming to understand knowledge as, which I personally believe, just because you believe something to be true doesn't necessarily make it knowledge. It makes it true belief. Now, since I learned initiation before I learned science, and then I learned history, wow, all of that stuff I applied to history and what was going on during the time and how one secret society transitioned into another until it came out into the open, until it became fundamental Christianity,
mm-hmm.
as an example.
Wow. That's deep. In your book, right, your very first poem, it's called As She Passed Through Me on the Way Home. Now, can you give the viewers an idea about the time that when this poem takes place, where you were, in the history of the place where you were?
Oh, sure. I was living in a castle, and the castle was famous not only for the prior inhabitants, but that it was known to every resident of this small coastal oceanside town that it was haunted. And when we sublet. And
wait, you knew it was haunted before you moved there?
Oh, no. Well, I kind of did. Dominique said to me, you know, it has a reputation for being haunted, and I said, great.
So you thought that was just the thrill, huh?
Yeah, it was just like, you know, okay, so we're going to hear some creaky doors. I don't mind. Are you kidding me? And anyway, so when we first got there, we couldn't get oil and we couldn't get wood. We could get nothing delivered, no food. So finally a constable came by and to meet the new residents of the castle that was supposed to be empty. And we told him about our problems, and he laughed, and he said that out of all the estates that are trespassed up and down the shoreline, this is the only place people will not step a foot on.
It sounds like one of those haunted movies that you see where all the kids won't go, you know, near the sidewalk of the haunted house. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And continue on, please.
Okay, so he actually got us oil from another town, and the wood, it was funny when the guy brought the wood, you have to open this big gate and drive down this big hill, and then you get to this little parking area where there's this round courtyard, and he literally dumped the pile of wood, jumped out of the truck, and with a big nail, nailed the bill to the top of the wood, and then sped away.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's how, like, it's like, what is wrong with you people? But then I began to find out, because slowly I started having dreams, I started hearing sounds, I started hearing things. I'm studying for exams, I'm in university, and all of this stuff. So
So you never had any experience where you were hearing things, seeing things before this time, correct?
No. I'm a thrust of my work, and I specialize working with chronic schizophrenics, who are known for their sinister auditory and visual hallucinations.
So you didn't think that it was contagious at that time, did you?
Well, no, and no one can tell the source of or the substance of a hallucination. When I intake people and they tell me they're hearing voices, I always ask them, both ears or one ear? No, because it's important. I wouldn't say this if I was at work.
Right.
For example, the voices of St. Catherine, St. Margaret, St. Barbara, the voices of St. Jeanne d'Arc, those voices were heard in one ear, not both ears. And when they're heard in one ear, it all depends on whose the voice is.
Oh, that's very interesting. I did not know
so
that.
I would always, when I took a mentally ill patient, I would always ask, and I would never tell that I asked, but just for my own curiosity. And just once did a woman tell me I only hear the voice in one ear.
So the history of the castle that you're in, do you know what happened? There was an event that happened there. Can you tell our listeners what happened? And who?
Sure.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Sure. Thanks. Well, as I said, strange things had been happening. And I started having these dreams of a woman. And at one point, we were outside the house, and another point we were inside the mansion part, which we couldn't get into. I mean, it was just like the movies. Everything's draped in white sheets. And so then I'm trying to keep them in order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then... Oh, that's right. I already told you these stories. on the lower level, there was a drawbridge that led out to the ocean. Mm-hmm. And I would run the length of underneath the castle where this big banquet hall was, this big banquet fireplace. It was never finished. And I would jump on this drawbridge as it would swing out over the ocean. And it was great during storms. And it would always come back with a thundering slam like you never heard. And that's important to later. Because one night, as I kept running back, because we were always scared there, and it was very rare to be alone, as I passed the fireplace, I noticed this passageway between the wall and the back of the fireplace.
No way.
And then I looked up and I saw all of these rocks as if they spilled out of this hole that was blocked by this old medieval door. But the door was pressed from the inside. It was big, three or four big oak planks with a small window of bars, and it was pressed from the inside.
Who was the original owner of the castle? I mean, you know, but who was he like? I know you want to keep this anonymous, like who it was and where it was, but who was the guy? Like, what did he do? And there was something that happened to him. What happened to him?
Okay, well, as time went by, this is really important to what happened. The man who I knew, but who had long since died, had inhabited the castle. Ironically, when my daughter was 3 years old, I took her to my favorite place, which was this guy's grave along the ocean. And I didn't know 3.5 years later I was going to be winding up living in the castle.
Oh,
now,
wow.
As I had these dreams and I wanted to learn about what you're asking, I started to ask around town. And any time I asked about him, oh, everybody was just gushing because he was like the socialite that made the town in the 19th century. Now, when I mentioned his wife's name, people wouldn't even look at me. They'd walk away. I was in some records office and getting all this gushing about this guy. And then I said, and what do you know of? Because I can't find anything about. And she slammed the book and she says, I know nothing about her.
Hmm.
Now, apparently,
what do you know about her?
That she was a psychic astrologer card reader from another town.
Hmm. Interesting. Very, very interesting. And what happened is she lived at the castle with her husband, correct?
Yes.
And so, continue on.
Okay. So time goes by, and I eventually got a hold of a police log, and the butler's diary. And they both said that the master had died and was murdered in this Victorian wingback chair in his library. Now, the newspapers in the big cities said that he died of a heart attack.
Hmm.
Now, when I found out that, suddenly this figure who had until now just been in dreams and whispery light and fog, we go, Veronique and I, go behind the great banquet fireplace and push back the door and get into this big old empty room and go into another big old empty room, and there's a shaft, and we're under the main part of the castle. And I'm inside the shaft, and there are three walls to my sides and to my back. And I'm looking up through these, what do you call them, slats, mm-hmm. in a hole in the ground, and I can see the kitchen. And Veronique says, Peter, don't move. I said, why? She said, well, look all around you. And I did. And all around me were every kind of imaginable hairy spider. Just freaked us out.
Just a hairy spider? Spiders out of nowhere?
No. The walls were covered with hairy spiders of all kinds of sizes.
This sounds like Jumanji.
Oh, no. I was in the middle of a spider colony. And, I mean, there was ones as, like, there were big ones and there were little ones, and it's like, you know, there's babies and there's great granddaddies, and it's like,
oh, that's creepy.
Normally I like spiders, but we came back with a stepladder. I said, excuse us, we'll just be passing through. And we went up through the slats in the castle, and this is where it matters. So it turned out to be the kitchen, which was off the servants' quarters, which was off the main hall, which was into the main living area, where on one end was a giant fireplace, all the rooms. The upstairs was exposed like balconies, and there were rooms along. It was just like a little, it was not a little chapel, because the front that faced the ocean was all stained glass, except the tall cathedral glass that you could look out. So this boat was leaving or going by, and I took out my lighter, and I said to Veronique, I said, why don't we perpetuate a little ghost story? And I started bouncing the lighter up and down, and Veronique said, Peter, don't do that. And then suddenly there was like this cold, cold wind. And it just came right at us, and it didn't go by us. It stopped right between us.
Peter, we got a caller. You want to take a call?
Sure.
We have Dave from New Jersey on line two. Dave, you are on with Peter, with Dr. Peter O'Lalor. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, Dr.
Hi, Dave.
All right. I hope you can hear me. The phone isn't that good. All right. My question is, what is it that you want people to know that they don't already know? Like, what is your message in that, in the book?
It's sharing an experience that belief systems may be just that, systems of belief. Just because you believe in something doesn't necessarily make it knowledge. It makes it true belief, which is epistemology. And of all the things that indoctrinate us, from religion to nationalism to politics, we have to find people who understand or at least experience that life is more than what civilization promises you. And we can only get that by exploring other people's experience. So I don't have a mission. I'm just sharing.
Okay, then I'll have a follow-up question. What should people do differently? What should people, let's say people are caught in their own belief system. What do you think they should do differently?
What do you think they
follow
should
do differently? Follow their heart. Follow their heart.
Okay.
So follow their hearts. Do we use our mind more than we use our heart already? Wait a minute.
Let's just compare two philosophies, existentialism and Stoicism. Stoicism from Rome says you're responsible for your own happiness. We are happy beings to begin with. Only other people or circumstances can make you unhappy. Okay? And then there's existentialism, which means any positive choice that you can make is always going to carry negative consequences. So following one's heart is opening themselves up to trying to understand where they're going in life, but life isn't all there is. Where else are you going? And who are you going to rely on to guide you there? Priests, poets, philosophers, politicians, or your own self? Just a thought.
I like the idea of my own self. I think our heart will never lie to ourselves. So I think it's important to listen to our heart. You know, since you brought up philosophy, you know, what is the difference between physics and metaphysics? I think a lot of people are perplexed between physics and metaphysics. I get a lot of questions all the time. What is metaphysics?
Physics is everything. Physics are the laws of nature. And it starts in Western civilization with Aristotle's Physica. Okay, and it talks about gravity, motion, laws of science, things that can't be proved, things that can't be disproved, all right, the formula of science. But metaphysics, not only the laws of nature, but they're perceived as the thoughts of God. And the first question is going to be, what kind of God? But that's another discussion.
Right. Absolutely.
Physics and metaphysics is the laws of nature, whereas metaphysics are the laws of nature as the thoughts of God. And we can find them in Hindu scripture and last mentioned.
So it's kind of like shadowing or mirroring effect, like a mirror effect of one another in a sense, right? You know, kind of like left hand, right hand, right brain.
Absolutely. It's easy to study physics because it's either real or it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
But let me put this forth. Nothing unreal truly exists.
Well, you know, that brings him back to the woman in the castle and the man in the castle. So the man who was murdered in the castle was never, they never found the killer that killed him, correct? And the woman, who was she to you? Tell our listeners, right, our listeners, well, actually, you know, you got 2 minutes to kind of get into it, and then we got a break here. So if you could give them a quick background of, you know, she was a tarot, she was a card reader, she was a psychic.
She was a nobody.
She was a nobody. Nobody wanted to deal with her.
She was a nobody from a nowhere place that was immersed in astrology, card reading, and a psychic. And the person that fell absolutely head over heels at first sight with her was an industrialist, a diamond mine owner, and a big industrial magnate.
Ooh, sounds like a catch.
So they were absolute opposites. And no one approved of the marriage.
I just want the listeners to know why I'm having you talk about her, because your very first poem in Shrouded in Mist is almost like a dedication to her, right? When we come back from our break, maybe if you can give them a sample of your poetry and read to them as she passed through me on the way home. And so they can get a sense of what you were feeling like.
I'd appreciate them listening.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back with the people.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please. Give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
That's great. All right, we are back. We are back here with Dr. Peter O'Lawler, and we are discussing Shrouded in Mist, his book. Just right before break, we are talking about Irene, and Irene was a big part of Dr. Peter's life. Doctor, can you read us your poem as she passed through me on the way home?
Sure.
Thank you.
I just got to find my wireless mouse. It gets away from me sometimes. Well, now, I want to... Oh, yeah. See that picture? Dedicated to my daughter. All right. But that's another story.
You had too many stories. We gotta get you on again.
Okay. As she passed through me on the way home. Excuse me. A departed soul has passed within, yet does not she share this world of sin. And lo, I know that she is grieving, departing again, her soul is leaving. With hands in prayer we shared a tear, O curse the wretched heart we share. Upon the castle wall we stared, forever lamenting that which we feared. Often she touched me as I lay sleeping, quietly moving as if she were creeping, when not I knew her name at all, like the first night in the great hall. With a gentle hand upon my face, like a shadow of a most heavenly grace, would I awake only to know a gentle spirit, most dire woe. O wretched, wretched heart art thou, to thee I pause and humbly bow. Thou art a plague upon my being, to rob me of the love I'm seeing. She asked me pleading with her to be, yet lo, life's force did not release me. Upon the castle wall so clearly, I declined, lamenting so dearly. And though my life be not my own, entangled by the seeds I've sown, engulfed was she by heaven's light. She passed through my heart and out of my sight. Atop the castle wall I cried. I could have fallen and then have died. And whither I'd go and whither I'd be, if only I'd fallen down to the sea.
Wow. So Irene was the spirit that was haunting the castle.
You said her name.
Oops. I think I said her name more than once.
Oh.
Well, so okay. She's the spirit that was haunting the castle.
Oh, that's her name's in the book. What an idiot.
Yeah, okay. So she's the spirit that's haunting the castle. So at the very end, you're saying here that she actually became a heavenly light in front of your eyes, and literally that light went into your body, into your heart chakra?
Yes.
And the feeling that you felt, I mean, because that is a very metaphysical experience and very metaphysical symbolic, you know, a language of symbolism right there, because a lot of people do not realize that that can actually happen. And
it does.
Because they don't experience it, they won't never know what that's like, they would deny it.
It's really important to interject that it takes a lot of force, will, energy, or love.
Mm-hmm.
To reach through the veil of existence and touch something.
From the other side.
Yes, and when she would creep in at night and sit on the edge of my bed and put her hand on my face, as long as I kept my eyes closed, she would sit there. But the minute I opened my eyes, she'd be gone because I couldn't see her, and I was really scared.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure most people would be frightened. I think most people would have left and never went back. What made you stay?
Well, that was my point. She was sad, and I have this knack for helping people who are sad.
And also
I found out that why she was sad, because her husband had been murdered, mm-hmm. and covered up, and fake stories put in the newspapers, and mm-hmm. I found out the truth, and she loved me for it, and we had a really good time for a long time, and the most important time was the third time I almost died. The first two times anybody could have said, yeah, it was a coincidence or I imagined it. But I didn't imagine what happened the last time. See, she was followed by shadows. And just like Jacob Marley forming the chains in his life mm-hmm. that kept him dragged down and unable to ascend, Irene had shadows accompanied, and they really, 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 really did not like me.
Mm-hmm.
And the third time that I almost died was Veronique said, are you sure the screen's in front of the fireplace? She was on the phone, and I said, yeah.
And who is she?
Well, she was someone a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the screen wasn't, and in the middle of the night, two logs, all three logs, but two logs were about 3 feet long, and they had rolled out of the fireplace 8 feet and then piled up on each other and started a huge fire in the middle of the huge room I was in, and it burnt all the way down to the stone masonry underneath. But,
no way.
Yes, Irene came in and shook me and said, Peter, wake up. The house is on fire. So I woke up. I got lobster pots full of water. I put out the fire, and then she disappeared for 2 weeks, and then she appeared to me on the balcony in the lace dress. And I might add that while this was going on, there was about 20 people inside having a party because we were celebrating me first.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't alone when it happened, but I was alone outside. And whither I'd go and whither I'd be, if only I'd fallen down to the sea. Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, I can't. I understand and I know the laws, the metaphysical laws, the universal laws that makes things, it's almost not real, but, you know, knowing things, you know it's real. Just because a person does not experience it themselves does not mean that it's not true. So a lot of people are right now thinking like, oh, this guy is crazy, or this guy, he's lost his marbles.
We can look to the world's religions and find a single language, and that language is salvation, sanctuary, and redemption. And for those who deny it, don't need sanctuary, they don't need salvation, and they don't need redemption, and we know who you are. people suck.
Irene is, you know, she's this aberration, and she's waking you up. She's, you know, she's God, she's loving you, like, and you're giving her love back, too. And that's what's really ironic about the whole situation, because it's like you fell in love with this aberration.
But not romantically, because
right.
I also fell in love with a raven in the same way at an animal park. But that's another story.
All right, well, let's move on. Okay,
but
so...
I gotta tell you, when my wife forced me to stop talking to the raven, The raven went to the middle of its pen, dug up a very shiny piece of wood, and passed it through the fence and held on to it until I took it.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, see, that is... Wow. And you have a nickname. Can you share your nickname with our listeners?
You mean my raven name?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my... in some circles, I'm known as Raven Two Crows.
Raven Two Crows.
Name given to me.
That sounds like a hybrid. ambivalent hybrid, if that makes any sense. Anyways, I want to ask you some questions. I see that our listeners aren't engaged. Listeners, you may call in and ask Peter any question that you like. Please use this opportunity and call in.
Ask for a joke. I've got plenty.
Yeah, he sure does. He's got a lot of jokes. So if anybody, you want to crack up, give him a call. There is something that I wanted to kind of say, and I want to know your opinion, okay? So I'm going to quote this, and this is quoted by Master DK. I'm not going to say this master's full name, but, quote, "Death can be best regarded as the experience which frees us from the illusion of form," unquote.
Yeah.
How can you connect that to your experience that you had within the castle? Maybe your experience that you went on the road of Rishikesh to go for the liberation, because Buddha, what was it that Buddha said?
Please, on his deathbed, he said, "Please do not worship me, but remember me as one who woke up."
Remember me as one who woke up. And is that a form of death without dying?
Yes, exactly, but it's not a mortal death, which was my mistake.
Explain it to our listeners, because I think our listeners right now might be a little bit perplexed on this subject, because as we know, death is most unknown to majority of the people, also the most feared as well. So explain it so our listeners can understand that.
Okay. I am not my body. My body is not me. When my body dies, I will not. When Peter dies, I will not. Now, as far as being awoken, there are all kinds of stages of being awoken. What you're awoken to, what kind of senses you use, how you interpret the world. But the idea of being awoken is to lose your sense of identity and replace it with one of wholeness. In other words, my body is still alive. Peter, the identity, the ego, the wants, the desires, the attachments, okay, if they don't exist for Peter, and they're never going to exist for me, then I can wake up and realize that this material world is a world of impermanence.
Let me see if I understand this right. You're basically saying that we never die, but we wake up.
Exactly.
So it's like we're dead alive. We're always sleeping because we're so unaware. It was what you're saying, right? We never die, but it's like we are dead right now. Because why? Because we're not consciously aware of our soul?
No.
No?
No. You have to be able to conquer death and not worry about it.
I agree, because why do people fear death? Is it because it's unknown? Or is it because of the pain and the grief of losing?
It's because they've been distracted and sidetracked by false promises of punishment or reward, of which there are neither.
You always do that to me, where you throw me off track and you're making me think. And here I am thinking, and I want you to repeat yourself.
It's like the man who asked me if I had a mission. I don't know.
Well, you know, I absolutely, it's like, you know, I totally get it, though. I know a lot of people are probably having a really hard time, you know, trying to wrap their head around this concept.
Okay,
and because it is abstract. It is an abstract thought.
Let me start again.
Okay.
The Buddha said all is impermanence. Okay, nothing is permanent. So why hold on to it? It's not going to last. The Hindu scriptures say this is Maya, the world of illusion and the world of darkness. Don't get sucked down by pleasure or you will never escape the cycle of death and rebirth. Now, I forget why I was saying that.
So pleasure... Okay, just take your time. No worries.
Yeah, that's my respiratory issues. So Buddha... Oh, awoken.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Versus being asleep. In the Jewish and the Christian Kabbalah that explains the Tree of Life and the involution of spirit, session of worlds... the lowest point on the map is called the Malkuth of Isaiah, or the world of illusion. Now, you put them all together, and what you have is matter encasing spirit and creating form through substance. Mm-hmm. This is why the ancients equated matter with evil, because evil didn't have Christian connotations. It just meant... it was the lowest form of creation, which mm-hmm. is spirit encased in matter and the subsequent forms that are made through the substances that are created.
See, I can understand that, but I think a lot of people right now are going, what is he saying? Huh? No, that's okay, and that's totally okay, because that's true, though. You know, the matter is evil, and a lot of, because we are matter, correct? And people,
I like to think of us as the stuff. What stars are made of?
How about what the Gnostics taught? They taught yeah. that there was nothing evil in spirituality, but it was only evil was in people.
Yeah, and the Massachusetts Bay Puritan colonists would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You need to I'm sorry, I don't mean to say it like that. I understand. Let me tell you. This is Coffee Talk with Sophie and Peter. No one can butt up. Oh, so what were we talking about?
I forgot.
Me too.
We were talking about the Gnostics and...
Oh, that's right. Okay. It floods back to me. Gnosis means knowledge of self, okay? But Christ belonged to the sect of Nazarenes, which was a subset of the Essenes, of which St. Joseph belonged to. Now, the second book in the New Testament is specifically directed to these Gnostics.
Uh-huh.
Who accompanied Christ, and what was your question about Gnostics?
Well, the Gnostics believed that there was no evil in spirit realm, but the evil only existed in the physical, human, in the being realm of matter, of physical matter.
And they don't know evil.
Hmm. Because, and why do you say that?
Because matter exists in all planes of existence except one, and that would be above and beyond the abyss of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You see, even the Irene had not lost the membrane that separates the body from the soul. Mm-hmm. Okay, when that membrane is lost, the identity, the person Irene and all of her memories of Earth, except love, are going to go into their own plane of existence and pass through time and slowly dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as she ascends and she judges herself as having the capacity to understand what she will ascend to, then she will realize in human form, seeing people that have been waiting for her, blah, 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 yada, 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 she's still matter, okay?
Mm-hmm. Spirit and matter, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that evil is synonymous with earth, air, fire, and water, mm-hmm. but in the language of the ancients, matter is anything that was made known, manifested, that sort of thing. So even the briatic level of consciousness, when you exist only as a consciousness without form or substance, you're still not you or it. Mm-hmm. It's still considered material because it is still not high enough. What do you want from me? I got rid of my body. I got rid of my soul.
Right,
it's just
right.
My mind. What do you want from me? You want nirvana. You want to be reabsorbed into that which you proceeded from. And that, to that man from New Jersey,
in nirvana,
Dave,
that's a higher state than bliss, right?
No, nirvana means eternal bliss. But eternal bliss sucks. Because
why would it suck?
Because it's like this. It's like I tell people, you know, if you make it and you got the place that you've waited your whole life for and all your family, your friends there, it's not going to take you long to figure out, wow, there's a lot more to life here than a bunch of hot playing angels. Because it is about life.
Oh, you crack me up all the time. Hey, you're always getting me off track, you. You know, let me throw one more question out to you here. And I want to know the symbolic, symbolically, is sleep the cousin of death?
Why do you ask?
Well, do we die every night when we go to sleep? So because I often feel, you know, I've read that, you know, we die repeatedly every night when we go to sleep. Because sleep is like another form of death, no?
Well, my sources tell me that we can look at it according to the ancient Hindu scriptures and compare it to modern science. Now, in ancient Hindu scriptures, the deep sleep, the 4 hours that is not REM sleep or dream sleep, those 4 hours in modern times is called detoxification. It's when your body detoxifies. But in Hindu scripture, during this deep sleep, now remember, all things exist in the same space but on different dimensions, so there's no traveling involved. Your spirit rejoins God.
Okay.
And then returns to REM sleep, and if there are any messages your spirit wants you to know, then you will get them in your dreams. As long as they're not anxiety-based or wish-fulfillment dreams.
Well, let's leave that for now, Doctor. You know, you're great. You're a great friend. You're a great person. I'm happy that
you
came on our show tonight. Do you have anything? Do you have a last word that you want to say to our listeners?
Thank you.
Just for food for thought for our listeners, death without dying is a process of liberating oneself through self-discipline. As a leaf falls from a tree, inevitably the leaf evaporates into soil, thus germinating a microcosmic cycle. You know, I would like to give a big, big thanks to Don Newsom. And I want to give a shout out, a big shout out, happy birthday to our producer, Mike. And I want to thank the listeners for listening in and participating. And thank you for your calls, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.